Chapter 6. Adamantua. The Magos biologist's name was Phaeton Laurentis. When the first noise burst occurred, he was preparing to enter the blister nest behind the shield core advance. The blast of sound terminally damaged two of his six sensitive audio-specialized servitors. Like Slaughter, he immediately contacted Fleet Tactical and also sent direct vox burst communiques to the staff of his own vessel, the survey barge Priam, which was in the vanguard of the Imperial Fist's fleet. "Tell them I need at least a dozen more audio drones shipped to the surface," he told his communication servitor. The servitor, a grinning bronze skull mounted on a cloak-swathed wire anatomy, chattered its teeth mechanically as its brainstem fired processed vox data packets into the ether. Laurentis reeled off a list of other complex devices he would need: technolinguistic engines, parsing cogitators, vocalization monitors, trans-etheric responder coils.
"Permission denied for surface drop of requested material," the communication servitor replied after a minute. Its voice, which emanated from a mesh speaker cone fused into its verdigrised collarbone, was oddly that of a young woman. As the voice spoke, the bronzed skull clacked its teeth aimlessly and uselessly.
"On what authority?" asked Laurentis, offended.
"Undertaking command," the servitor replied.
"Open me a direct link with the chapter master," said Laurentis.
"Pending."
"Of course, he will be busy. Inform me when the link is open," Laurentis said, and strode off to mount one of the motorized carts that would convey on their heavy, clattering treads the Magos' survey staff into the alien habitat.
Smoke from the nest clambered into the sky as if trying to flee the war zone. The heavens above were black with filth, and embers rained down. Around the edges of the nest, which were cracked and splintered like the shell of an egg, the soil and vegetation were awash with draining biofluids from ruptured nest organics and the ichor of slain chromes. There was a pervasive stink of rotten fruit. Such a sight, such a vivid display of an alien ecology, even one so damaged and desecrated, should have filled Magos biologist Laurentis with total fascination. His life had been dedicated to the study of xenoforms, and it was very rare, even for a man as distinguished and respected as he was, to see such a spectacle firsthand. Usually, the only traces of hostile xenoforms and their habitats that Magi biologists got to inspect were burned scraps and fused tissue residues brought back by undertaking fleets. However, his enthusiasm for his research and the alien specimens spread out before him awaiting his probes and scalpels was muted. The sound had bothered him, and he knew exactly why. A total of four noise bursts, each of progressively longer duration, occurred in the following 90 minutes. After the fourth, Chapter Master Cassus Mirren walked slowly and thoughtfully across the gleaming bridge space of the battle barge Lanxium, took his seat on the great steel throne, and gestured to the vox servitor that had been waiting patiently for almost 2 hours. The command crew and the bridge officers watched the chapter master anxiously. He was a great man, arguably the greatest warrior alive in the Imperium. His deeds and achievements were recognized on an honor roll that was the envy of all other chapter masters. He was commander of the Imperial Fists and the living embodiment of Dorn himself. But he had a temper. Oh, yes, indeed. Since the latest phase of the attack had begun in the early part of the day, Mirren had been on his feet in the ship's strategium, watching every last scrap of data as it came through from air and ground forces, and taking personal control of every tactical nuance. Defense was the Imperial Fist's greatest skill, and even in attack, the chapter's strategy was reflective and complex. Nothing was left to chance. Nothing was overextended or risked. Leave the headlong insanity of assault to the likes of the Fenrisian wolves or the White Scars. The Imperial Fists were the Imperium's finest military technicians, and even the most fluid plans of assault were made with the same precision reserved for indefatigable defense. It was often repeated that the Lion had once scoffed at Dorn's precision thinking, remarking that no plan ever survives contact with the enemy, to which Dorn had retorted, "Then you're not making the right plans." Indeed, Imperial Fist's methodology, the methodology that had saved Terra in its darkest hour, the methodology espoused by Rogel Dorn and inherited by Mirren, seldom used the word plan. Mirren prided himself on schemes of attack, whereby layers of careful, preconsidered variables could be stripped back as necessary. Every step of combat, that most chaotic and mercurial of all circumstances in the galaxy, gave way to multiple possibilities. Some warriors, especially the noble ultramarines, reacted intuitively to such possibilities as they occurred. An Imperial Fist identified and prepared for all of them, and simply diverted to the part of the scheme that was most appropriate. Most believed that Mirren's presence in the Strategium and his hands-on approach to the Adamantua undertaking was typical of this obsessive precision thinking. In truth, Mirren liked the challenge. War did not come often enough for him. It was a test, a game, an exercise, a trial. He wanted to be involved, entirely involved. He wanted to push himself. War was fading away in the Imperium of Mankind. The purposes for which the likes of the Adeptus Astartes had been engineered were dying out. They had done their job. Peace prevailed across a billion worlds. Only distant skirmishes and half-hearted wars boiled along the hem of the frontier, most of them the endless campaigns of suppression against the ubiquitous greenskins. The orcs never went away. They menaced and harried the edges of the Imperium like packs of feral dogs, and every now and then broke in through the metaphorical fence and got at the metaphorical livestock. Once or twice every few centuries, a new and potent bestial war boss arose. Their numbers multiplied in response, and another of their mass onslaughts was unleashed. Mirren knew from intelligence briefings that the greenskins were currently enjoying one of these periodic revivals, and that for the last few decades some of the frontier wars had been especially hot. But even so, they were exactly that. Frontier wars. They were very far away. Far too far to act as effective demonstrations of imperial might to the population of the Terran core. And the orcs had not been a serious, palpable threat since they'd been stopped at Ulanor by the beloved Emperor himself. Adamantua was different. It wasn't the frontier. It was close. It was a genuine Xenos threat without being a critical one. It was also an opportunity to live-test the capabilities of his chapter and his own mind, and to demonstrate the enduring worth of the Adeptus Astartes. Opportunities on the scale of Adamantua were all too rare. Mirren's temper was famous. It manifested, more often than not, when those around him failed to keep pace with his tactical thought process. He'd even been known to rage at cogitators and data engines. His anger showed when the rest of the universe failed to stay in step with his brilliance. First, Captain Algerin had privately remarked that Mirren had become chapter master because of his anger. Yes, his tactical genius was astonishing, but it was equaled by 36 of the senior-ranking Fists. What Mirren had was a tactical genius tempered by passion and the unpredictability of gut feeling. Some said there was more of Sigismund in him than Dorn. When Mirren retired to his throne during the pitch of the assault, all of the bridge crew expected his anger to emerge. The noise bursts had confounded them, and there was a tense feeling that they represented something that had not been factored into a precondition. "Connect me," the chapter master told the Vox servitor. The servitor extended its Vox speakers and opened its mouth. A beam of light projected out of it and formed a hololithic image on the deck at the chapter master's feet. A jumping, inconstant picked image of the Magos biologist appeared, cut and broken by atmospherics and data feed. Laurentis was in profile and appeared to be riding on some kind of open vehicle, and the light conditions were poor.
"Magos," said Mirren.
"Sir?"
The Magos crackled back over the speakers. He turned to look at his picked unit, his face turning full on in the image.
"You sent a signal?"
"Over 2 hours ago, sir. I need to transport equipment to the surface from my vessel, and permission has been denied."
"There is an assault underway, Magos. I was not in a position to grant orbit to surface passage for any non-military transport."
"Are you now in a position to authorize my request?" asked the Magos. "If I can explain,
I need the items so I can...
You don't need to explain, Majos, said Mirren.
I don't.
It concerns these bursts of noise, doesn't it? Asked the chapter master. Your common request came through very shortly after the first one. You have not got in my way before, Majos. It was slow-witted of me not to realize that you would only request a surface drop in the middle of an action like this if it was both urgent and pertinent.
I appreciate the compliment, sir. You are quite correct.
Tell me what you know, said Mirren.
I believe the sound is organic in origin.
Organic? Asked the chapter master. On this scale? Majos, it was a global detection.
Organic, though it may have been synthesized and boosted,
Laurentius replied. I cannot explain why I feel this to be the case. I hope you will trust my experience and judgment. Both of those things tell me it is organic.
A bioweapon? Something the Krones have that we haven't predicted?
The hollow image of Laurentius shook its head.
I think it is communication, sir, he said. We just have to work out what it is saying. Hence my request for additional equipment.
Your transport is already underway at my order, said Mirren.
Thank you, sir.
Are you suggesting the Krones are trying to communicate with us? Since mankind first encountered them, they have not shown any propensity for sentient communication.
This attack may have pushed them to a level where they feel communication is necessary, sir, replied Laurentius. Perhaps they have broken their long silence because they are desperate to sue for peace or surrender. I cannot answer that yet, but I believe it's clear that something is trying to communicate.
Stay on this link, Majos, Mirren said. I want to hear more about this, and I want to be apprised as soon as...
He broke off as the picked image of Laurentius became choppy. The Majos appeared to be agitated. There were flashes of light and a great deal of background noise and interference. The image started to jump and wink out. Then it shut off altogether.
Reconnect! Mirren roared. Reconnect that link!
Transmission disrupted at source, sir,
the servitor reported.
I think the Majos' party has come under attack, said third captain Achilleos, awaiting his master's orders.
I can damn well see that, said Mirren. Route the nearest available ground forces to him immediately. Pull his fat out of the fire. I need him alive.